Hello, this is Abby.
Dear Abby, this is gonna be a long one.
Oh boy.
Dear Abby, how do you tell the difference between a new exciting crush and a rebound?
Does it matter?
Dear Abby.
Dear Abby.
Dear Abby.
Welcome to our little corner of the internet. This is the Dear Abby podcast. I hope you stay and hang out with us. See you in a sec. Oh, hello, hello. In a place called the Dear Abby podcast. Everything I wish I didn't know. Hello, hello. Welcome back, everybody, to the Dear Abby podcast. I'm your host. My name is Abby. And I'm excited to record today. It feels like it's been a month since I've talked to you guys last, but it's only been a week. I feel like when I am not recording, then I feel, first of all, like I can breathe better. But second of all, I feel like I'm constantly thinking of what I want to talk about on the podcast. And it's sometimes to the point to where I'm like, okay, I actually have to like live my life normally. I feel like this is probably common for if you have a podcast or if you start something on social media or something, where you start to live your life for that one thing. And as much as I think that's like cool in a way, I also think that's like not what I want to do because I'm not happy when I do that, to be honest, to be completely frank, if I'm just too hyper-focused on like what would I want to share on the podcast or anything like that, I feel like my life becomes fake almost. Like it doesn't feel like I'm really living my life. It feels like I'm, I don't know, it's this weird thing, but I also really want to constantly share my thoughts on the podcast and also just have fun. So I'm really trying not to live my life to share it on a platform because I feel like that's when things get bleh. It's a fine line. I will say it is a fine line. But I've also always been the kind of person that thinks a lot. You know, I'm a deep thinker and I'm not going to be shy in saying that. I know that has a negative connotation to it where it's like, ooh, I'm such a deep thinker. I'm not saying I'm smart. I'm saying I think a lot. Are those thoughts right? Probably not, but I think a lot and I think deeply about things to the point where sometimes I have to reel back in and just be like, okay, you know what? This is actually not helpful for me right now. I'm trying to be more in the moment. So let's take a second and just let that go. Happy Thursday. I hope everyone is just chugging along wherever that is. If it's on a train or just chugging along. I cannot go from so this to this right now. It's not flowing very nicely for me. Today we are talking about the idea of just being yourself and also the idea of using social media as a way to connect to people and just how I think about that, because this is coming from someone who was not necessarily chronically online. I actually don't think that's ever been like a huge issue, like as it has been for other people. My issues are other things. But for someone who numbs themselves a lot on social media still, and not as much, but definitely there could be some improvement. The amount of time that I'm not on social media has significantly improved my emotional, mental well-being. And I'm 100% positive that like there's a few things in life that you can say, I did this and it really positively affected this. Getting off social media has been one of those things that you can almost immediately see a difference. And it's still, even though you can see a difference and things get better, it's still hard to let it go. Just like any type of, you know, vice or numbing technique or, I mean, coping technique. But I still really enjoy social media. So I want to talk about kind of the balance that I learned to have. And I'm sure everyone else my age is trying to learn how to have as well. And so we'll get into that. So first, I want to talk about dubs and L's. So the first dub, well, the only dub, is that I did schedule an appointment for OCD therapy. I'm not going to lie, I'm really, really nervous because it's a new therapist. And for those that have OCD, it's very, the thoughts that you have are extremely A, triggering, and B, just so bleh. Like they're a range of different types of themes or different content, and it's really just not the prettiest stuff. It's very taboo, like serial killer, you know, just basically you're a bad person, but any theme that could go with that narrative. And so when you're telling a therapist all the thoughts that you're having, it's very scary almost, because you just are scared that somehow they're going to be like, oh, well, that's not OCD. You're actually just a bad person. Or like, well, the way that that thought's coming up, that means that that's true. You know, that's like your biggest fear. So it's a little bit nerve-wracking going to a new therapist who doesn't know me, and I don't know them, and I don't have like a trust thing developed with them yet, like I did with my last therapist. So I don't know if I can get him again, but we'll see, hopefully. But if not, I'm just gonna just go for it. And I don't know if my insurance covers it yet, so maybe I won't go, because if it doesn't cover anything, it's just not something that I can afford with my current situation. So yeah, we'll figure it out. But that is a dub though. I'm proud of myself for doing that. And I've been looking into a couple other methods of therapy. I'm just interested to see what this therapist has to offer, because every therapist is trained in OCD on the app that I use, NoCD, which is a sponsor. But at the same time, they also have different training sometimes, like with different backgrounds. They could do, you know, I don't know, cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT or ACT or IFS. Internal family systems therapy, I am learning about. I'm not a therapist. I'm just learning about it via other therapists who are trained in that. And it's something that I feel like I really relate to, because I have it feels very complicated in my head, to where I have like a million different types of voices. Not like actually I can hear them, but just, you know, almost different attitudes. And one part of me is, that's the loudest, I think, now, is just either the shame part of me or the protector. And the protector is very loud. And I really am grateful for that part of me. But I think it's to the point sometimes where, I don't know, it feels very complicated. But I really like IFSI. I like their therapy terminology, really resonates with me just personally. And so I might look into doing that type of therapy, or someone who's trained in that, because I'm really curious about that. And just more somatic healing, somatic therapy. But to be honest, I'm not as like obsessed with healing as I used to be. I'm more now kind of on a journey of just trying to be at peace and not need so much, and just everything that I have is enough. And I don't know what healing looks like anymore, so I've just kind of cut any expectation as to what that looks like. But I still have hopes and dreams and, you know, stuff like that. But I think that's also a dub, is just my mindset is shifting. I feel a little bit more neutral, even though I still struggle with OCD, but I don't have as much anxiety with it. Life is pretty normal, I feel like, for me right now. And I'm kind of grateful that it feels more calm. That being said, my L was, I think I pulled something at the gym, like either if it was last week or the week before, but my hips hurt really badly. I think I'm just really tight because I haven't been just stretching as much, and just I haven't been practicing that at all. So I feel the impact of that heavily on my hips, because I learned that, you know, if your hips hurt, it's not always actually something in your hips. It can be something in your calf or something that's pulling on that muscle, and that muscle's pulling on that muscle, and it's like a trifecta of, you know, one thing's hurting and that can go all the way up to the opposite part of your body, and that can, you know, signify something's wrong. So I just think it's really interesting. And that's why full body stretching for me has been very helpful. But when I don't prioritize that while I work out, then I feel like that just like makes me not be able to continue to work out in the same way because I have to take a couple days off because my knees are killing me. Maybe that's not the right thing, but you know, I'm not going to pay for a personal trainer right now. So that is an L. It kind of stinks because, you know, when you want to get into running and stuff like that, you can't because when I run, my knees hurt and I'm trying different like strategies of running and there's just a lot that goes into normal exercise. I feel like when you're trying to train for, I'm not training for anything, just for myself, but there's a lot of education and a lot of patience. I feel like that no one really talks about when you're trying to get better at something or trying to train in a certain way. It takes so much patience and just like slow and steady. Everyone's so obsessed with seeing, of seeing the end result of something, but it is nice and freeing to just not expect anything when you start training and just take it day by day and be like, this isn't going to change my life in a day, you know, it's not going to change my body composition in a day or anything like that. And then that's way more sustainable because then you're not as upset when you don't see something crazy, you know, change. But you'll catch me stretching. I roll out with like a lacrosse ball on my back and on my butt. That feels really good. You don't realize how tight your butt is until someone's either like if you're getting a massage and they elbow it, you know, like a little butt massage. Hopefully that's normal. I think it is. Like with a lacrosse ball or you're rolling it out and it feels like you're on a bone, but that's a muscle. It hurts so bad. Like your butt is so much more sore than you think. That's it for dubs and L's. The idea of being yourself is what we're talking about, as well as the social media aspect. Being yourself is a very simple statement, but it feels more complicated because it feels like, especially in your 20s, if you're kind of going through it, you don't really know what that is. And you don't know, sometimes when you just go through different experiences, life changes, circumstances change, you feel if you've been really attached, which is normal to be attached to what's in front of you, and things flip-flop, you have to try to find yourself again within that new experience, within that new time of your life. And it's definitely something that is a beautiful but heart-wrenching experience. I don't know. I've always seen myself in one way. And when I kind of became aware that I could change some things about myself that I don't particularly think bring me joy or peace or happiness, that was very almost scary in a way, because I felt like that is maybe like because I have anxiety or OCD, it makes it like more intense. But regardless, it felt like, oh my gosh, almost like a heavy burden of, oh my gosh, there's so much that I would change about myself. That became very overwhelming, very fast and very heavy. And I think the reason that it became heavy was just because you have so many options of what you can be, what you can do. And there's so many voices and noise and opinions, and in your own head, now you've, you know, especially with being chronic, like online, you intake so many opinions on every single thing ever. And so now you're having to like filter out what you actually think. And it just takes a lot of more work than I feel like generations had to filter out in the past. And so it makes it more complicated, I feel like, to just be yourself. But I truly, like, from the depths of my soul, I really believe that a huge part in enjoying life is to be yourself. And then the other thing that I thought would be fun to talk about is social media and what it has been like to grow up with social media and then have it be a huge part of your life. And then now it's a way people run businesses. It's like just, it's morphed into multiple things throughout my life. And so my relationship with social media has just changed throughout my life as well. And I want to talk about that as well as what it's like now And especially now that I'm doing a podcast and I'm on Instagram and TikTok kind of, but it's weird because our generation, well, I'm 26, by the way. So anyone that's close to that age, we grew up and we had like, I played PC games, you know, we had the internet since I can remember. It's definitely evolved. We've had iTunes, you know, YouTube to MP3 converter and all that good stuff. And then I think I got a Facebook or a Twitter. Wait, no, I got a Facebook first when I was in, I think, junior high. I think maybe 7th grade or 8th grade. I got a Facebook. It was very monitored, but it was a Facebook. And I had friends, and I remember being live, like, you know, when you'd go on Facebook and you could see who else is live on Facebook at that time. And if there was like a cute boy that I liked, I'd be so excited and I would be like, oh, please say hi. Like, please message me and just say, hey, even though I know if I saw them in person, I would not say a word. All flirting I ever did was always online. Like, it was always chatting, texting, whatever. It was never in person. I was so awkward, as most junior high kids are, I think. That was my experience, my first experience with social media, as most kids, or MySpace. I never had MySpace because I feel like that was more of like a naughty place to be. You know, Facebook was more like monitored, I guess, by parents. Yeah, just you would start to post like pictures on Facebook and hope people liked it. And it was more exciting. It was kind of more innocent because you just are a kid and you're posting like, oh, I think I look pretty, and you post it and you edit it crazy so your eyes are so blue and your body's so tan or something like so ridiculous. Just not realistic at all, but that was what was like cute back then. And so that's what you saw other people get likes on. Like if a girl my age would post and she'd edit it a certain way and she'd get a bunch of comments by like the cute boys that I thought were cute, and or other girls, like something seems like she like made friends that way. Then that's what I wanted to do. So I feel like at a young age, you know, junior high, you're very impressionable. That's where it starts. Started for, I think, our generation. Maybe even earlier, depending on when you got a Facebook. But for me, it was junior high. So that's kind of the impression. And then, so you already are starting to develop like, oh, what I see other people do that gets good attention, I want to do that exact thing. Like, I need to be that, because then I will get what they, like, I'll just get that attention or validation, you know? And that's just like over and over and over and over again. And then you get into high school, and then the same thing happened to me in high school, where now you have a little bit of Instagram, but it was mostly like, well, it was Facebook until I feel like maybe sophomore year, freshman, sophomore, and then it was Twitter. And then I got a Twitter, and then Twitter was the same thing where you would post things to get likes. Like, it was very, very thirsty energy. Very thirsty energy. Very rarely did I feel like anyone posted just because it was like, and they didn't care about likes. Like, it was just, you posted on social media to get attention. That's all it was. Like, you prayed that you got likes. You prayed that you got like comments, that people validated that you were funny, or that that was like a cute picture, or that that was like, I don't know, unique or something. And then fast forward to once you graduate, now you have already 6-7 years of this social media validation like ingrained into you. For me, it was definitely ingrained into me. Even like Snapchat, I would post on Snapchat. And I'm being very vulnerable and honest about like how I needed validation, especially from males, because I don't know, I just knew how to get validation, because something works, cool, it works, you get validation, awesome, now I know where to go if I ever feel like not enough in other ways. Like, I know how to get validation. So I'd post on like Snapchat on my story, or on Instagram on my story. It was the energy of like, I act like I didn't really care, but deep down I feel like I really needed that validation to kind of just distract myself from other things that were kind of going on within me. So yeah, now you have years of just that continuous loop, pretty much. No one really teaches you not to do that. So you're young, impressionable. Then you get older, and now it's just like, it's kind of a habit, but it's not as like crazy, you know, when you get older, because most of the time you just are maturing naturally. So you're like, oh, like this probably isn't that healthy, you know? And eventually I just like, I think I deleted Snapchat because I was like, I don't like I know what I'm doing and like, I don't want to fish for compliments. There's a point where I was like, I am feeding into a version of me that I don't actually relate to. Like, I don't like that I want so much attention from guys. It's also this weird thing where that's probably why, you know, I was maybe more of like a pick me girl growing up, even though I think probably in junior high, I probably said like, oh, she wears too much makeup, you know, just some rude bratty thing. Cause I was young and impressionable and dumb. And that's what everyone else is doing. And probably I was jealous cause they probably had cute guy friends and I was not liked. So it's weird how like we've had this relationship with social media, like this like untangible, like we're looking for something, like continuous something, but that's never gonna like it never fills me, it never feeds anything. It's always just in the moment it feels good, it feels great, but then it's very fading and then I feel more disconnected with myself because, you know, I'm just like, wait, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing? It also helped because then after I went through that transition of just like, I'm done trying to get attention, like this is too much. Then I really started to be present with myself, work on myself, and working on myself just meant like trying to figure out what I actually wanted to do and what I wanted to spend my time doing and value myself without like, if everyone else hated me, would I still be able to love myself, that type of thing. And then I got married. And so that was like helpful to kind of get me ready, I guess, for being married type of a thing, because it is kind of a weird transition when you're single, and especially because I was younger, and then you're just like not single anymore, you get married, which was kind of an easy transition for me, if I'm being honest, mostly because I realized like, oh wait, I don't want to have to like lean on this to get validation my whole life. I want to be like free of this and feel very confident just being by myself, you know, with no validation. I think while I was married, I would still post just kind of for fun. That was really just more for family, for myself, for fun. Now, like after my divorce, my relationship with social media kind of got heightened again to the point where I was kind of needing that validation from people because I was in a very vulnerable time in my life. I felt really not validated by obviously my ex-husband and everything that had happened. And I felt really confused. And so when I'd see comments saying like something to be helpful, and it really was so helpful, and I don't think there was anything bad or wrong with that. Then when that started to fade away, I was like, oh my gosh, wait, crap. Now I'm alone again. Now there's no hype over everything. And now I'm just like alone with all of these thoughts and feelings and heaviness. And then I started doom scrolling. And then I just became hyper fixated on like basically just numbing myself for hours a day. And it was very compulsive too, because that's when I had, my OCD was really bad. I would scroll for forever. You know, I'd just go in rabbit holes. And the whole time I would think to myself, I don't want to be doing this. Like I actually, this is like making me more anxious, but I would still do it. Cause I'm like, I don't know what else to do. This is just what we've done. So I'm just going to keep scrolling. You know, this is what everyone else is doing. So I'm going to keep doing it. With therapy and with kind of taking my power back, I changed my relationship with social media again to where now the only reason I go on social media is solely to get inspired. And I don't let it be a numbing thing anymore, because if I'm like, you know what, if I want to spend time doing something that's not very meaningful, I honestly would rather just play video games. Like I'd rather build something cool on a video game. I'd rather build a log cabin in the middle of a cannibal city. Yes. So that's what I'm doing when I play video games sometimes. Okay. With a girl that has four legs. It's called Sons of the Forest. I love it. Like it got to the point where I was comparing my spirituality to others, like my Christianity to others. And it just got like, it can get so dark so fast, I feel like, if you're on there in a vulnerable state of mind. And so rather than doing that, I was like, okay, the rules are I'm only going to go on social media to like laugh and to get inspired. And the inspiring part, there's a fine line, okay? It's like, really, I just like to go on Pinterest. I love Pinterest. It feels so safe. I don't doom scroll on there. It's more just like, oh, just feel good stuff. Instagram, TikTok usually has so many opinions on everything. So much hate, so much like, it can be really supportive. But for me, I'd rather just get the support in real life. Also, sometimes I like to use it for connection, but that's the part I wanted to talk about. I told this to my sister a while ago, and I think she said it on her podcast, which made me feel good. I love when she quotes anything that I say, and she makes me seem a lot smarter than I am. Social media for me has never been, I can never feel connected to people on the other side of the phone. Like, I don't see someone and I don't feel connected to them. And that's just my personality. It's not like, you know, that's just how I am. But I do think that there are, like, Instagram is such an amazing tool, and TikTok, to find connections that you can make in real life. But if you are only connected to people online and not in person, you're going to miss this, like, actual real human to human connection, because nothing ever, ever will replace being actually in person with someone, speaking to them, feeling their soul, feeling their soul, like, in front of you, and, like, the vibration and, like, you know, all that mumbo jumbo. But that stuff is so irreplaceable. So that's why I think I love social media for connection, but not in the way that it's ever going to replace an actual real life person. Opinions online, relationships online, fighting online, hyping each other up online. It is what it is. None of that will ever replace a real person connection. And I think the amount of misunderstanding that comes from social media and comments and videos and takes and all of these things is crazy, because we're seeing opinions of people online and then we take that opinion as, like, truth for some reason, but we don't know that person. We've never spoken to that person. We've never been in the same space as them. Like, and we don't even know if we would, like, why would you have people in your own life that are so not one-dimensional? People are so complex, so complicated. That person probably changed their mind 30 minutes later to an hour later. They said it in the heat of the moment. They saw a TikTok, it triggered them. They commented. They probably don't actually believe that fully. Sometimes, let's be honest, they probably changed their mind. And so it's like, the amount of just, like, confusion and misunderstanding that social media causes drives me, as someone who's very much a mediator, absolutely up the wall. Because I'm like, you guys, if we, like, stop fueling the fire, you know? No one's going to understand anyone on social media because it's one-dimensional. You can really only understand someone if you're talking to them. You're trying to understand each other. But this, like, back and forth on social media is so exhausting to me. So I don't know. I just was thinking about that because, like, when I see someone post, like, something beautiful, like a beautiful caption, I'm like, I just don't care. Not that I don't care. It's just like I can't relate to that. I need to be with people in person to feel like that's real. You know, that's just how I perceive things. That's how I feel like I can suss somebody out. I feel safer listening to someone's opinion or somebody's story if I'm listening to it in person, or even a podcast is better, and because then you're able to hear a whole explanation rather than just a small little snippet. Documentaries are great too, but yeah. Okay, let's do it, Dear Abby. It's like using what I think I said, it's social media should be like a bridge to connection, not like what's on the other side of the bridge, you know? Social media should just be what connects you to the other person. But social media itself, Instagram, TikTok, that itself is nothing. That's just like, it's an app. It's absolutely nothing. What's on the other side is a bunch of people. And a bunch of people are very complex. And so you're reading comments that are one-dimensional, things that are one-dimensional, but they're coming from a complex person that probably changes their mind. I know a lot of people do love to connect on social media, and so do I, but it's just never the same as, like, when it's like an in-person connection for me. Maybe that's a hot take. I don't know. Everyone's different with their opinion. And that's okay. Okay, you guys, I am feeling very, very excited and emo because this podcast is now made possible by No CD. You guys have heard me talk about No CD a million times in my podcast. I did therapy there. I go to support groups still to this day. And it's been such a huge part of my recovery journey. I couldn't be more excited about this partnership with them. NoCD offers effective, affordable, and convenient OCD therapy. OCD therapists are trained in exposure response prevention therapy, which is a gold standard treatment for OCD. With OCD, you can do virtual, live, face-to-face video sessions with one of their licensed, specialty-trained therapists from anywhere inside or outside the U.S. It's affordable and they accept most major insurance plans, so getting help has never been easier. OCD therapy goes beyond sessions. It includes in-between session support, where you can message your therapist anytime, access therapeutic tools, and get support from a community of peers who are overcoming OCD right in the NoCD platform. Breaking the OCD cycle takes effective treatment. Visit NoCD.com today and book a free 15-minute call with their care team, many of whom have also experienced OCD. If you think you may be struggling with OCD, there's always hope. Now is a time to regain your life. Visit NoCD.com today. All right. All right.
Dear Abby, I just want to say that I love the podcast and I'm super thankful. Just super thankful for you. I need some advice. I want to know how you deal with like OCD setbacks. I feel like lately I've been like doing really well and not like attaching myself to a ton of things, but then recently I've had like really, really bad existential OCD and I'm just like feeling super defeated and frustrated because I feel like I've been doing really well and just like falling back into this feels super, I just feel super defeated and like weak and I hate that feeling. So I'm just wanting to know like how you deal with setbacks and also just how you accept that, I don't know, like that you have OCD. Like every time something comes up, I'm just like, I don't want it. Like try to fix things. Just how do you accept that you're going to be struggling with something like this? Like so insufferable your whole life. Thank you so much. All right. Bye.
I kind of talked about this last week. I mean, I talked a lot about relapses and trying again. So hopefully last week was helpful. I'm glad it came at a good time. So I won't rehash too much, but I do want to like cover this question again for sure. Cause I think I struggle with this still and I don't have like all the answers and everything figured out. So just so you know, answering this question from a place of like, I'm still struggling, at least on that level, I can connect with you on in that way where you're not alone, like in that fear and that frustration and feeling like so hopeless sometimes and discouraged. I still definitely experience that. And a lot of other people still do. I don't want you to carry that like as an extra layer of shame or an extra layer of something negative to see yourself with because you feel hopeless. And you're like, well, other people seem like they have so much like, you know, hope and stuff. But in my dark moments, I feel very hopeless and I feel like, what's the point, you know, of this if it's just going to keep happening? And I have those thoughts and those feelings. Truthfully, I just sometimes have to keep going even though I can't see a light. Like I cannot see sometimes a way out and that's horrifying, but I believe that people love me and I believe that there is a way. And just that like tiny thing of like, believing that there's a way and maybe I'll eventually see a light at the end of the tunnel, just go towards that again. So if it's a relapse, it's so discouraging and everything like that, but just also remind yourself that you have felt better from it before. And it's probably, it might feel like it's worse than before, or, you know, whatever, but you have the tools that you used did help you get to a better place. So there are things that work, like things work and it can work and it will work for you. So just maybe take some time to acknowledge, okay, I'm in a bit of a relapse right now. I've somehow, it's just spiraled again. I maybe was doing too much compulsive, like shaking out thoughts and pushing thoughts down because sometimes when I feel like, oh, I'm recovered, and then intrusive thoughts come, I'm like, oh my gosh, now do I like it? Because now I'm feeling good, so I'll feel good and then I'll have a thought and I'm like, oh, like I'm used to feeling anxious when I have these thoughts. So now I'm like, it's just like this weird cycle, which sounds really dumb to other people that don't have OCD. We know, okay? It's just the way that we're wired. I think taking a second to be like, okay, I'm guessing, I'm pretty sure this is OCD again. So I'm going to treat this like a relapse and I'm going to treat this like OCD. And these are the steps. This is what I've been told will help. Don't think about it too much. You know, try to figure out if it's OCD or not. Just be like, these are the tools that I've been given to help with this. Practice the tools again and get to a better place. And then, you know, as far as accepting that that's going to be an experience that you have a lot, that is a tricky one. That one takes time, I feel like, and just practicing self-love and self-compassion in ways of physically. Sometimes I'll go on a long walk if I feel really overwhelmed, and just let myself feel everything and have every thought and just let it all just bleh. Sometimes that looks like physically hugging myself and kind of gentle parenting myself, I guess, in the way of being like, I know this is really scary and I hear you and it's so scary, but this is what we're going to have to do. And I need you to trust me, you know, like talking to yourself, your wise part, as they say, your compassionate part, to move forward. And so just telling yourself, like, I know it doesn't feel like there's any hope, but we got to push forward because we deserve to be happy. Like, you know, you have infinite worth and it takes time to recognize that, obviously. And I don't know if we ever really fully will, whatever that means, but you are worth putting in the work for. And that means for yourself, like it's very liberating to realize like you can put in the work for yourself, like you can take charge of yourself. Hopefully that helps. But yeah, definitely if you haven't listened to last week's episode, I talk a lot. I mean, basically the whole episode is about relapses and that kind of thing. So you should listen to it. Okay, cool. I wish you well on your recovery journey and I'm here with you. If you didn't see what I did, I hit my chest and then I did a peace sign. Like, yo, that's honestly kind of a vibe. Can we bring that back? Okay, well, I gotta go because I gotta cook dinner for my boyfriend and me. I'm making risotto and salmon. So I'm searing a salmon and I'm making risotto from scratch pretty much. I am very scared. I've made big promises to my boyfriend. I did say it would be Michelin star worthy. So we'll see if it actually is. I'm excited though, because I've been watching so many cooking shows and I'm just like, yeah, put me in. I can do this, you know, put me to work. We'll see how it turns out. I guess I'll update you guys next week. Hope you guys have a great weekend. Give yourself more self-compassion than you probably think that you deserve, because truthfully, that's what's changed my life. So love you guys. Bye. Oh, had you taken a ride to join a lake? Nunchy bomb and saw good old guy.